You know that feeling when you ask someone how to drive to the grocery store, and instead of just giving you simple turn-by-turn directions, they hand you like a dense 500-page manual on the thermodynamics of a combustion engine.
Oh, I know it well. It's totally overwhelming, and it actively makes you want to just abandon the trip entirely.
Right, which is exactly what it feels like for most WordPress developers trying to learn Docker for the first
Well,
time.
100%.
I mean, you open a tutorial and the very first sentence hits you with something like, containers are lightweight virtual machines.
Yeah, right.
And then they immediately paste in a command like Docker run dash IT Ubuntu bash.
Which is terrifying.
Exactly. And if you are the person listening to this right now, you know, someone who has spent the last 5 to 15 years building really brilliant, complex sites with PHP, MySQL, and standard traditional hosting, you probably look at that, recognize absolutely nothing, and just quietly close the tab.
Because that is a completely rational response. I mean, if you've never had to run a literal virtual machine just to build a custom WordPress theme, telling you that a container is a lighter version of one gives you zero practical context.
Zero.
It's basically a solution looking for a problem you might not even know you have yet.
So consider this deep dive your official course correction. Welcome to Module 11 of your 16-module journey into the modern web and DevOps landscape.
A big one.
It is. And our mission today is to just cut through all the tech Twitter hype. We are going to translate what containers actually are, why they matter specifically for your daily WordPress workflow, and maybe most importantly, when you should completely ignore them.
We definitely need to cover when to ignore them because the tech industry just loves to treat every new tool like a golden hammer.
Yeah, he really does.
But to make that judgment call, we have to basically dismantle Docker's notoriously confusing vocabulary. We have to translate it into plain English.
Okay, let's start with the big one then, the word that gets thrown around constantly.
Yes.
What actually is a container?
So at its most basic level, a container is a packaged unit of software. But the real magic is in what gets packaged.
Okay.
It contains literally everything needed to run that specific application.
Yeah.
So it has your custom WordPress theme code, sure. But it also has the runtime.
Like the exact version of PHP.
Exactly. The exact version of PHP. It includes the required system libraries, the server binaries, the specific configuration files, all of it.
So it's not just the site files you'd normally, zip up or upload via FTP.
Right.
It's the whole environment itself. But wait, earlier we joked about that lightweight virtual machine
Yeah,
definition.
the classic textbook definition.
Right. How is this actually different from me just running a program like VirtualBox on my Mac and installing Linux on it?
Think about the architecture of a traditional virtual machine. Building a VM is like building an entirely separate, standalone house right in the middle of your property. You have to lay a brand new foundation, install a completely separate plumbing system, wire up its own electrical grid. In computer terms, that means the VM has to boot up its own entirely separate operating system kernel.
Which is super slow, right?
Extremely slow. It takes minutes to start. And it just hogs massive chunks of your RAM and CPU just to keep that heavy foundation running.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds exhausting for just trying to test a simple WordPress plugin.
It is. Now, contrast that with a container. Using a container is like renting an apartment in a massive, already built high-rise.
Oh,
You
you.
don't have to build the plumbing or the foundation. You just tap into the building's existing infrastructure. In this case, the container shares your host computer's underlying kernel.
Ah, so my Mac's operating system is the apartment building.
You've got it. The container just gets its own isolated unit with its own locks.
Okay.
It uses the host's existing plumbing, which means it boots up in milliseconds. It just runs. And when you're done, you terminate the container, you move out of the apartment, and it completely vanishes.
Without leaving any lingering background processes eating up your memory.
Exactly. No mess left behind.
That makes so much more sense. But that brings us to the two terms that always get tangled up, image and container.
Oh, yeah, people use them interchangeably all the time.
Right, but they are clearly very different things. So what is the difference?
They are completely different stages of the process. If the container is the physical apartment you are currently living in, the Docker image is the immutable read-only floor plan and furnishing guide.
Okay, so it's a snapshot.
Yes, you build that floor plan once, it gets locked in, and then you can use it to instantly spin up dozens of identical apartments.
And when my container stops and disappears, that floor plan, the image, is still just sitting safely on my hard drive, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just waiting for you to create the next identical apartment whenever you want.
I need to go. Okay, and the way we actually draft that floor plan is through something called a Docker file.
Yes, and the way we write it is so simple.
Which is just a plain text file, right? There's nothing proprietary going on.
Just a standard text file. Think of it as a perfectly reproducible setup script. Like, think about the old way of configuring a server.
Oh, boy.
You'd SSH into a machine, type apt-get install PHP, manually open a php.any file in some terminal editor.
Tweak the memory limit, save it, restart the service. I've been there.
Right. And then you completely forget what you typed 6 months later when you have to do it again for a new client.
Which is basically the root of so much developer anxiety.
It really is.
Yeah.
But with a Docker file, you write those exact steps down as commands. Docker reads the text file, executes the steps one by one, and bakes the final result into that immutable image.
That's amazing.
And because it's just plain text, you actually commit your Docker file into your Git repository right alongside your theme or plugin code.
Oh, wow. So your infrastructure literally becomes part of your version control.
Exactly.
Let's bring this down to earth and apply it to the daily grind of a WordPress developer. Specifically, rebuilding the local environment. Because setting up a local WordPress environment from scratch has traditionally been an exercise in pure misery.
Yeah, it has.
I think we've all lived through the MMP or XMPP nightmare.
It's practically a rite of passage at this point. I mean, you take on an older client project and you realize it absolutely requires PHP 7.4.
Right.
But your Mac is running PHP 8.2.
Right.
So you download XMPP, try to run multiple versions, and suddenly you have port conflicts, Apache won't start, your MySQL connection is refusing. You lose an entire afternoon just trying to get the site to load on localhost.
So how does this new container mental model actually solve that specific Tuesday afternoon headache?
Well, if you've ever used a command line preset tool like Cypionb or WPNEV, Docker is basically the ultimate evolution of that.
Okay.
Your Docker image already has the exact required PHP version, the specific MySQL database version, and the Nginx configuration completely baked in.
Right from the floor plan.
Exactly. You tell Docker to start the container, and your environment is running perfectly in milliseconds. There are no port conflicts with your host system because the container is completely isolated in its own virtual apartment.
Look, I know you listening are probably thinking, wait, I already saw this. I use Local by Flywheel or maybe Lando.
You have the GUI tools?
Right. I open a nice graphical interface, I click a button that says New Site, I pick my PHP version from a dropdown, and it just works.
It is very seamless.
It is! So why on earth should someone who has a one-click GUI tool bother learning to write raw text files?
Okay, tools like Local, Lando, and Devkinsta are fantastic.
Right.
They really are. But here's the secret most people don't realize. They're actually just running Docker under the hood.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are just graphical abstractions layered over the exact command line engine we are talking about right now.
Okay, so they're hiding the actual engine from me to make it user-friendly, which, I mean, that's great until the abstraction breaks.
Exactly. Abstractions are wonderful right up until you hit the edge of what the interface was programmed to allow. Let's say your new client has a highly specific search feature that requires a custom Elasticsearch container.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe you need to configure a Redis caching layer that your GUI tool just doesn't have a drop-down menu for. You're completely stuck.
Right.
But when you know raw Docker, you aren't limited by the menu options someone else designed. You can build the exact environment your application actually demands.
But a WordPress site isn't just one application. It's PHP plus a database plus a web server.
True.
How do I manage all those different pieces if they're supposed to be isolated in their own separate apartments?
That is where a brilliant tool called Docker Compose enters the picture.
Docker Compose?
Right. While a Docker file builds a single image, say just your PHP application, a Docker Compose.mlr file orchestrates a whole symphony of containers. It's a single file, usually about 50 lines long. In that one file, you define your WordPress container, your MySQL database container, your Nginx web server, and even utility containers like MailHog to catch outbound test emails.
And if they are isolated, how do they talk to each other? Like, does WordPress actually know where the database is?
Docker Compose handles the networking automatically.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it puts all the containers defined in that file onto their own private virtual network. Your WordPress RoPP config file doesn't need a complicated IP address. It just connects to a database host, literally named MySQL. Docker acts as the internal DNS and routes the traffic perfectly. You just type one single command, Docker Compose up, the whole multi-server stack boots up, you type Docker Compose down, and it all cleanly shuts off.
That level of local control is brilliant, but solving the local development headache is, I mean, it's only half the story, right? The true power of this paradigm shift really happens when we move from our laptop to the live server.
Absolutely. This was the original pitch for Docker over a decade ago, and it has absolutely stood the test of time. Think about the traditional deployment pipeline.
Okay.
Your local environment is a Mac. You push code to a staging environment, which is, say, a Deucer server someone provisioned 3 years ago. Then you push to production, which is a completely different Linux distribution entirely, running slightly different package versions.
Those are three entirely different foundations.
Yes.
Things are guaranteed to break in transit. That's where you get the classic, well, it works on my machine, but not in prod excuse.
Exactly. But with Docker, that excuse dies forever.
Because it's the same blueprint.
Because your production server doesn't just run similar software to your laptop. It runs the exact same container image, the literal same blueprint.
That's huge.
If it runs locally, you have a mathematical certainty it will run in production. Because you aren't just deploying the code, you're deploying the entire environment.
I mean, that is a massive shift in how you think about your job. You're moving from, I need to carefully configure this remote server so it matches my code, to I am just shipping a sealed box, and that box runs anywhere.
It completely liberates you from traditional server administration. And, you know, it really shines when you start dealing with modern hybrid stacks.
Like what? Give me an example.
Let's say you're building a headless WordPress site. You want WordPress functioning purely as a back-end CMS on an API subdomain, and you have a modern Next.js front-end serving the actual user-facing website.
Historically, configuring one single server to host a PHP application, a Node application, and routing the incoming traffic correctly between them.
It's a nightmare.
That is a weekend gone right there. You're fighting in Jinx configuration files for days.
But with containers, it's trivial. It's just two blocks of code in your Docker Compose file.
Really?
Yeah, one container runs the WordPress image, one container runs the Next.js image. Then you put a reverse proxy container in front of them.
Okay, for the WordPress dev who hasn't used a reverse proxy before, how does that actually work mechanically?
Think of a reverse proxy, like a traffic cop standing at the single entrance to your server, usually port 80 or 443 for web traffic.
Right.
A user types in your domain name. The traffic cop looks at the request and says, oh, you are looking for the /appy route. Let me send you down the hall to the WordPress container. Oh, you just want the homepage. Go right through door number two to the Next.js container.
I love that analogy.
Yeah, the proxy handles all the SSL certificates and the routing, and the individual containers just do their specific jobs.
That's so clean. But let's do a reality check here, because we established earlier that there are times to ignore this technology entirely.
Yes, definitely.
So when does a WordPress developer not need Docker?
If you are just running a personal WordPress blog on a premium managed host like Kinsta or WP Engine, ignore Docker entirely.
They already handle it.
Exactly. They are already managing the environment for you. Mm-hmm. If you're building a simple static front-end side project and hosting it on Vercel, ignore Docker. The added complexity of writing YAML files just isn't worth it.
So where is the sweet spot?
Docker's value really appears when you have multiple services talking to each other, custom system-level dependencies, or when your production environment demands absolute fail-proof consistency across a team.
So basically, adopt it when the pain of managing the environment manually starts to outweigh the pain of learning a new tool.
That is a perfect rule of thumb.
All right, so let's say our listener is ready. They have a complex headless project. They need that consistency. Let's map out the landscape. What does the default modern stack actually look like for someone adopting this today?
For your local machine, the default starting point is Docker Desktop.
Okay.
It gives you the engine, the command line tools, and a really nice visual interface.
Uh-huh.
However, Docker Desktop requires a paid license for commercial use at larger companies.
Good to know.
So if you want to avoid that fee, or if you're on a Mac and want something a bit more lightweight, look into an open source tool called Kalima.
Kalima. Got it.
It runs the exact same container images, completely free.
And for managing the multi-container setup locally, we use Docker Compose, like we talked about. But where do the blueprints actually live once we build them? Like, where is the floor plan stored so my coworker can actually download it?
You store them in a container registry. Docker Hub is the default public one. But for client work, you obviously want a private registry so your proprietary code isn't just sitting out in public.
Right, that would be bad.
Yeah. GitHub Container Registry is fantastic for this, and it integrates perfectly with the code you're already pushing to GitHub anyway.
Okay, here's a question. Every tech blog makes it sound like if you aren't using Kubernetes, you're basically a dinosaur.
Oh, don't even get me started.
Should I be spending my weekend learning Kubernetes to host my client's WooCommerce site?
Absolutely not. Skip Kubernetes entirely. Unless you are managing infrastructure for an enterprise with massive scale, like a bank or a major streaming service, Kubernetes is a trap for you.
Okay.
It introduces control planes, massive YAML configuration overhead, nodes, and pods. For a solo developer or a small agency, it is vastly over-engineered. Stick to simpler orchestration.
Good to hear. Are there any other container technologies we should just keep on the radar before we move on?
You might hear the term build packs.
Build packs.
Yeah, it's an alternative technology that actually skips the Docker file entirely. Instead of you writing the setup script, the build pack scans your repository, automatically detects your code. It says, oh, I see a composer JSON file. This must be a PHP app.
Oh, wow.
And it builds the container image for you automatically.
That sounds amazing.
It's very cool. But knowing how to read and write a basic Docker file is still the fundamental foundational skill you need first.
Okay, so that's the map of the landscape. But, you know, every map has parts that say, here be dragons. Let's talk about the traps. Let's save the listener from the incredibly frustrating sharp edges that catch basically every single beginner.
The first major trap is file permissions.
Oh, I've heard about this.
This is especially painful if you are developing on a Mac or Windows machine, but the container is running Linux.
Okay, let me paint a scenario. I'm in VS Code on my Mac. I have my WordPress theme open. I hit save on style.css. The container picks up the change, but suddenly my WordPress media library says, cannot write to disk when I try to upload an image. What is actually happening under the hood there?
It's a fundamental mismatch of identity cards. Operating systems track who owns a file using numbers, called user IDs or UIDs.
Okay.
On your Mac, your main user account is almost always assigned UID 501. But inside the isolated Linux container, the default user running the web server usually has a UID of 1,000.
Ah, so when the container creates an image upload, it stamps it with owned by 1,000.
Right.
But when I try to edit or delete that file from my Mac says, well, I'm user 501. I don't have permission to touch this.
It is infuriating. Fixing it involves explicitly setting the user in your Docker Compose file or matching the UIDs, but it will almost certainly catch you the first time you try to map a local folder.
Speaking of mapping folders, that connects to, like, the most terrifying trap of all, data loss.
Oh, yeah. The big one.
Because we established that containers are ephemeral, right? They are temporary apartments.
Exactly.
So does that mean if I'm running my local WordPress site and I shut the container down to restart my computer, my entire local MySQL database just evaporates into thin air?
If you haven't configured your storage correctly, then yes. Yes, it does.
Wow.
Yeah, your database, your uploaded media, literally every single thing inside that container is permanently wiped out the moment it shuts down. Welcome to the most painful rite of passage in the Docker ecosystem.
Okay, how do we prevent that? Because I definitely do not want to rebuild my test database every single morning.
You prevent it by understanding the mechanism of storage. If you want data to persist beyond the life of the container, you have to store it outside the ephemeral apartment.
Okay.
Docker offers two ways to do this, volumes and bind mounts.
Break those down for me. What's the difference?
A bind mount is basically a portal or a window connecting a specific folder on your Mac directly to a folder inside the container.
Got it.
You map your Mac's WP content folder to the container's var, www.html, WP content. When you save a file on your Mac, it instantly appears in the container. It's great for code you're actively editing.
And a volume.
A volume is a hidden storage vault managed entirely by the Docker engine itself. You don't interact with it on your Mac's desktop at all. It lives in Docker's hidden partition.
Oh, I see.
And it survives container death perfectly. That is what you use for your MySQL database files. Getting a bind mount and a volume confused is a recipe for a very bad afternoon.
I'm writing that down in bold marker. Bind mounts for code, volumes for databases. Let's talk about the bloat trap next, because I hear complaints that Docker eats up hard drive space faster than 4K video files.
It definitely can. And it happens when developers write naive Docker files. If you start your Docker file with from Ubuntu, you are basically downloading hundreds of megabytes of operating system tools you don't need just to run PHP.
So it adds up fast?
Very fast. Mm. It's very easy to accidentally create images that are 1 or 2 gigabytes in size.
Which means pushing that image to a production server takes
forever. Exactly.
Yeah. So how do we fix that?
The trick to keeping the blueprint lean is to use what are called Alpine-based images. Alpine is a hyper-minimal, security-focused version of Linux that is only a few megabytes in size.
Oh, nice.
Combine that with a .dockerignore file, which works exactly like a .gitignore file to keep your local junk files and node modules out of the final image.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, use those, and your containers stay incredibly lightweight.
Okay, the last sharp edge to cover is networking. If my containers are safely isolated in their own virtual network, how do they talk to the outside world? Like, what if my container needs to connect to an old database I already have running directly on my Mac?
This confuses everyone at first. Inside the container, if your code tries to connect to localhost, the container just looks at itself.
Because to the container, localhost just means inside its own apartment.
Right. It doesn't mean the larger apartment building.
Yeah.
To get the container to route traffic back out to your actual Mac hardware, you have to use a special internal address.
Which is?
On Docker Desktop for Mac and Windows, that address is usually host.docker.internal. You use that instead of localhost in your connection strings, and the traffic cop knows to route it back out to your host machine.
Okay, we've covered a massive amount of ground today. I mean, we've taken Docker from a confusing buzzword to a practical mental model. It turns your entire server setup into reproducible text code.
It really does.
And it guarantees that the environment you build on your laptop is the exact environment that runs in production.
It really is a complete paradigm shift. And there's one final thing to keep in mind here. Production Docker is not the same as Docker Compose.
Right.
Compose is brilliant for running 3 or 4 services on your laptop. But when you move to a production server, you need a managed platform like AWS ECS or modern hosts like Fly.io or Railway.
Because they handle the heavy lifting.
Exactly. Those platforms handle the crucial production tasks like health checks, securely managing API secrets, and automatically restarting the container if it crashes. Your Dockerfile blueprint stays exactly the same, but the tool you use to orchestrate it at scale changes.
That makes total sense. If you are listening to this and you are ready to dive deeper and actually start writing these files, we highly recommend a few specific next steps.
Yes.
Go to YouTube and watch Fireship's Docker in 100 seconds for a really great visual summary. Follow that up with NetworkChuck's Docker tutorial for a real hands-on walkthrough.
Both are fantastic.
And for WordPress developers specifically, search for Brett Fisher's content on Docker Compose. He explains the multi-container workflow perfectly. And of course, the official Docker documentation and the Docker curriculum by Prakar Srivastav are just excellent free resources for cementing the mental model.
Those are fantastic starting points to really build that muscle memory.
And you will absolutely want that muscle memory because in Module 12, we are moving from packaging the code to actually delivering it.
Oh, yeah. Getting out there.
We'll be looking at CI/CD pipelines, unpacking what GitHub Actions actually does behind the scenes, and exploring how the magical deploy by Git push methodology is just entirely replacing the old FTP workflow.
The modern deployment pipeline completely relies on the container foundation we just built today.
It's all connected. But before we wrap up this session, I want to leave you with a lingering thought. We started this conversation by talking about the frustration of being handed a manual for a combustion engine. But think about what containers ultimately represent. If your entire infrastructure, the exact operating system, the precise version of PHP, the MySQL database, the web server routing rules, if absolutely all of that can be perfectly encapsulated in a 50-line text file and shipped anywhere in the world to boot up in milliseconds,
yeah.
Does the concept of a traditional web server even matter anymore? And if a server is just a temporary, disposable piece of compute power that we spin up and destroy on demand, what does that mean for the future of the hosting industry you've spent the last decade working with?
It suggests the ground is definitely moving beneath our feet.
Something to chew on while you map out your first Docker file.